I wanted to ask you about this before we left. I think it's awesome.
What?
The holster.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
I don't know if anyone has ever done that before.
To my knowledge, they haven't. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 46 of the Movie Mixtape. I am Dirky P, and joining me, as always, are my friends, Mike Feelgood and Darcy Mail. How are we all doing?
You did it.
Did it. It's not really. Those aren't our real names. I'm Dirk, and this is Mikey P. Mikey P, how are you?
Wow, revealing. That was a little preview of our DMs. There with that little inside joke, little giggle for ourselves there.
I mean, if I've learned anything about podcasting, Mikey, it's absolutely do jokes that nobody else will get.
I'm good. Had a week filled of Dirk on the mind, preparing for this movie. So it was
saucy.
A great week. It was a great week.
Saucy.
I can leave and let you two like simmer together if you want.
And those velvet tones belong to the boss, Marcy. How are you, Marcy?
Good. Still not ready. How are you, Dirk? Are you feeling good? Are you excited?
Yeah, do you know what? One week, I really look forward to the moment when you don't immediately just throw it back straight away and you expand, you expand on an answer about how you are. It's like the simplest greeting in the world and you struggle.
To release DMs, I sent Dirk this video of this snow leopard in its exhibit, and it sees the camera on it, and it totally freaks out, and Dirk was like, that's you, every beginning of every episode.
Are you asking me a question?
I'm going to learn how to edit and just do a supercut of you going, I'm not ready. How are you, Dirk?
And me not knowing what episode number.
Yep. I mean, I'm all for forgetting episode numbers now. At 46, it's gone. It's in the wind, isn't it? There's just more episodes. But if you're new to the podcast, sit down. Welcome. If this show of professionalism has got you excited and pumped, you're one of us. In this, we are doing, what is it called? Summer Break. That is the name of this mixtape, right? Is it Summer Break, Marcy? You know the name of the... Oh, she's shrugging her shoulders like she doesn't know a single thing.
I don't know anything and you asked me. It's like vacation, summer break, whatever. Yeah. We'll figure it out. We'll get a sticker on there eventually. I don't know.
we'll let it in post. But we are the Movie Mixtape and we are three amazing friends who are sharing our love of movies with each other. And we have a theme every four episodes. And we all pick a movie we love for that theme. And then at the end, we get randomized in the movie mixtape mixologist cocktail shaker. I think that's what we called it last time. And one of us gets a bonus pick. And today it's my pick. We had Marcy's pick last week. And we did After Sun for our summer break vacation mix, which Marcy came up with. What is the idea behind this theme, Marcy?
So we took a little bit of a break because I had a baby. She's really cute, so I didn't want to come back, but I did. So we decided to pick the best or something we really enjoyed that we watched while we were on break. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Marcy picked After Sun, which was a beautiful film. Go listen to the episode or watch the film first. And my pick this week, when we get to it, will be Meet Me in the Bathroom from 2022, the music documentary. So that's what we're going to get to later on. Have we all been busy this week? Have you been doing a lot of press-ups, Mikey?
Press-ups? Is that a push-up? Wait. I got some little banter about doing press-ups. I did join the local gym down here.
Ooh.
And and I've been doing my changing for work in the men's bathroom. And there is a old man there that is constantly on my schedule, and he's constantly naked and constantly making small talk with me. And this is something that I'm not, not that I'm embarrassed, but I'm just like, how is this always like different times? This guy's just hanging out in the bathroom, hanging out in the bathroom.
Oh man.
He always says, have a blessed day as I leave, sir.
Love it.
Is he
shout out to you, sir. Yeah. On my press ups. Spot my press ups.
What must the sexy quota have gone up in that gym after you joined, Mikey?
It's nice because it's a lot of old people doing their thing. It's a lot of like PT, and there's a lot of young people, so it's like very local. So it's nice. It's better than like the typical like Miami giant gyms. Everybody got the cameras out on them, kind of selfie thing. So it's nice. It's a nice change of pace. One I needed. I'm old now.
That's right. Mikey's from Miami.
Yeah, I'm that old guy. I'm the old guy in the bathroom, okay? I'm the old guy in the bathroom hanging out. All right, I'll admit it.
It's just Mikey looking at himself in the mirror and having a conversation.
And saying, have a blessed day to himself. Have a blessed day, guys.
Just being kind to himself. Good on you, Mikey. Oh,
God.
Have you spoke to anyone with their penises out this week, Marty Dell?
I don't think I want to answer that.
For fear of incrimination.
Oh my god.
Wow, we did make that joke that those nicknames were going to be like our Butt and Speedo podcast.
This is very much that energy. Yep, we did it. But yeah, so drinking a lot of coffee, just going to avoid Dirk's question, and yeah, finding time for naps. Go me.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. We call them power naps over here when you have one in the middle of the day for about 20 minutes. Do you do that? Do you call it that?
We don't call them power naps, but maybe we should, because yeah, it's like you're lucky if it's 20 minutes. So yeah.
Feel free to use that. Mikey's ticket on a t-shirt. Okay.
We call it hiding in the... We're hiding from your family or work in the car, and you try to do it off for 20 minutes.
I like hiding from your family.
Well, this is my pick this week. So I wanted to share something with you that I've been doing over the break. I wanted to engage with you two about something I've been filling my time with that I know at least one of you would be interested in. Me and Katie started watching Succession.
Mm-hmm. It's me, yes. If you couldn't tell.
So way back in our second episode, Marcy started banging on, God. Because we did Four Lions, and the guy who wrote Four Lions is an English guy who did all sorts of things, but he also apparently is very famous now for doing Succession. Mm-hmm. Jesse Armstrong, is it? Jesse Armstrong?
Yeah, Jesse Armstrong.
Jesse Armstrong. So yeah, started it, didn't I?
Don't ask me about it.
But there's no spoilers in this chat, just in case you were worried. Yeah. I'm not going to be saying anything crazy that happens, like when that giant car turned into a robot. Not going to be talking about that, okay? So don't worry, I'm not going to be breaking any news about Succession.
What season are you on?
I'm nearly at the end of season two.
Season two is my favorite. That's just my opinion.
Tell you what, though, I had trouble at the beginning with it. Because everybody's an asshole.
Everybody's an asshole.
And I was like, where is my hero? Where is the person that I'm supposed to be rooting for and cheering
for? You're not supposed to root for anybody on that show.
No. So I did have I struggled with it a little bit at the beginning. But then I kind of got into it after about four episodes or so. But they're all psychopaths, aren't they? Flipping.
How amazing, though, is Mr. Darcy? A.K.A. Tom Whamscams. That's his name on the show.
Well, I suppose in a way is he the most likable? Whamscams. God,
him and Cousin Greg, just the dream team.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I do enjoy those two. He's very not Mr. Darcy.
I know, that's what I tried to tell you. He is the exact, Mikey, like Mr. Darcy, suave, handsome, perfect in every way. He is the total opposite because they made him American on the show, and that's what happened, so.
Oh, wait, so it's another British guy doing an American voice.
I'm and then there's he's married to Siobhan, Shiv, and she's actually Australian in real life, so she does a really good American accent, too. Okay, so there's four siblings. One, his name is Connor. He's the oldest, but he's from a previous marriage, and he's played by Alan Ruck. And then the oldest is Jeremy Strong, who plays Kendall. Then it's Shiv, who's played by Sarah Snook, who's Australian. And then Roman is the baby, and he's played by Kieran Culkin. It is one of the best casts ever. And then Brian Cox plays the dad, Logan. Unreal cast. Just unreal cast. It is, like, the best show ever. I freaking love it so much.
Yeah, I think probably Wham's Gams is my favorite. Mm-hmm. I do have a little soft spot for... Oh, what's he? I can't even the older brother. What's the older brother called? Kendall.
Oh, Connor. Yeah, Alan Ruck.
No,
yeah.
not Connor.
Oh, Kendall. Kendall. You mean
idiot.
Kendall?
Yeah, I do mean Kendall. Yeah, he's okay. All right, I suppose, in his own way. In a way, he's very flawed, isn't he? Aren't they all?
Yeah, they all are though. I really like Jerry. She's like one of the people that works in the. In the company, she's like the blonde lady with the glasses. She's a little bit older. I freaking love Jerry. Jerry is awesome. And Jerry was supposed to be a man. And then J. Smith Cameron came in and they're like, you can have it. And then they gave it to a woman. But that's why she's still called Jerry.
So this is just us listing characters in the show and Marty going, I like them.
I like that person. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I like them. But it's kind of like, bad things happening to bad people, making bad decisions. It is funny. It's written really well, but just had it was just a bit at the beginning.
It's really dark humor now. It is really dark humor, but so you're liking it, though, at least.
Yeah,
right?
I'm liking it. We're watching it. That's what we're choosing to watch now on an evening. A few times I've gone, we can watch something else if you want, and we've kind of looked at each other. And there's been no spoken communication, but we both realized we're kind of too lazy to make another choice at this point, and so we'll just keep going with it. So far, I mean, you keep telling me it's like your favorite show. It's not my favorite show, but I am enjoying it, and it's fun in a terribly macabre, awful human way.
I think it does make a difference when you're actually watching it live.
No.
I'm just saying, like watching it week by week, and just the things that happen, and you're like, oh my god, these people. And it gets funnier. I don't know. I think Jesse Armstrong is so smart, and he gets American politics and American like capitalism so well for being a British guy, and he just gets it. And it's so funny how he makes fun of it all, and I love it. It's so good.
Well, I can go back to Kate, though, now and tell her not to bother watching this show because we're not watching it week to week. I'll just go back and just say that to her, shall I?
Okay, flipping all it. Right.
You have to sit with it for a week, Dirk.
No, I was like trying to explain like why I think it's my favorite show because I've been watching it from the beginning and I get that high. Like it comes on Sunday nights and I get that buzz like Sunday nights. Like it's happening, yeah.
You just said The Office was your favorite show.
Okay, currently on television, Succession is my favorite show. Favorite show of all time is The Office.
Got it.
Thank you, Mike, for keeping it honest, which is hard to do on this podcast. So there you go. That's what I've been doing.
Nice.
Yeah. I saved that
Thanks
for you.
For
didn't
sharing.
Even I didn't even mention it to you.
I know. I'm really like, how long has this been going on? And I didn't know about it, but I'm excited now we can talk about it. So yay.
Oh, shit. I forgot about that. You're going to ask me about that all the time. But that's how you podcast, right? You keep secrets from each other and unveil it live to millions of people on TV, just like we just did just now.
I'm going to check it out, so I'll have something to talk about. I think for a while, I don't know if it came out at the same time, but I always got it confused with the Adam Scott show. It was like Severance.
Severance?
And I, in my head, I kept switching it. I thought it was the same show for a while. I think so. It took me a while.
They're very similar in titles.
Yeah. Mikey, I've done that as well. So, you know, and I'm fiercely intelligent. So don't, you know, it can happen to anyone. So we're going to talk now about probably Meet Me in the Bathroom, this 2022 music documentary directed by Will Lovelace and Dylan Southern, based loosely on the book of the same name by Lizzie Goodman. Shall I do a synopsis? Or Mikey, do you want to do one? Because I did yours 2 weeks ago. It's okay. I'll do it. I've written it down. Yeah. I'm mocking you a little bit.
Thanks. Let's do that. Weekly segment, mocking me. Weekly segment.
Well, next week, I presume you're going to do a synopsis, aren't you?
Okay. All right. We'll talk.
Okay. This is Meet Me in the Bathroom. Bandmates wanted. Is New York not feeling very New York-y anymore? Is Y2K anxiety weighing you down? Does pop punk make you want to pop your clogs? Well, come experience neurosis in a whole different way and join a band. Ideal candidates could include socially awkward, shaggy-haired male allergic to public speaking, self-destructive front woman with a habit of masticating over microphones, and a middle-aged grumpy man who has just discovered dancing is fun. Yes, in a band, all your dreams of being famous and playing sold-out crowds night after night can come true. Just be careful to avoid all the typical pitfalls such as being famous and playing sold-out crowds night after night. Along the way, you'll have to deal with fractured friendships, the weight of expectation, and Ryan Bloody Adams. But if you look after each other and tell Ryan Adams to bog off, you might just overcome that terror-induced existential dread and remind New York that it is still a city that was born to make music. Meet Me in the Bathroom from 2022.
Nice.
Beautiful.
That was the synopsis. So this is our first documentary. How did you feel when I said we were going to do a documentary? Because I felt terrified.
Why?
I don't know. It's never been done before.
It's still a movie, though. There's still stuff in. There's content in the movie to talk about.
Well, thank God there's content.
But yeah, I will say it is a story. Like documentary, you could go at it different ways, and it still is presenting a story to an audience. And you posed a question, I think, before, like, what do you want out of a documentary? Which I think is a good question. And for me, I think it's even if you have knowledge of something or you have zero, I think you want an all-encompassing experience where you can feel like you come out of it with a better understanding of something, no matter what your level going in was.
So for me, for documentaries, I feel like there needs to be a reason it's being made, like why this story is being told. But I also want a complete story. I really did like this, but there was so much where it's like, it felt like it was going somewhere and then it would just stop. And it was like, oh, I really would like to know more about that. Like, especially when Karen O was talking about being a female lead singer and she can't even talk to her bandmates because they're dudes and it's a completely different experience. And I would have loved a whole documentary about that. Mm-hmm. And like just her career and her life. So I kind of feel like it got a little overcrowded. I love TV on the radio so much. They were there for like a minute and then they were gone. And it was like, why were they even in this? Like, that's so weird. So I really liked it a lot. But like, I just kind of wish like some of it, they dive a little bit more into. There's so much where it's like, here's this too, and here's this story, and here's this, and then it just like hits a wall, and it stops, and it goes to the next thing. So that was like my only like, okay, that's interesting. I would have liked to have known more about that. I don't know if the book's like that, though. I've never read the book.
I've not read the book either, but I think it's loosely based on the book, as in they tell the story of the same time of a rebirth of sort of rock music in New York in, what, 99, 2000 onwards. And the experience you describe there, Marcy, is how I felt when I first watched it too. Like, why is there so little of TV on the radio? Why were they even mm-hmm. in it? And I think TV on the radio were a big part of the book. They're obviously, Dave Sitek is part of the Yeah 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 story. So this film mainly focuses on the Strokes, Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Interpol, LCD Sound System, a bit of Moldy Peaches and a few other people. But they're the main bands. Mm-hmm. And I think what I was realizing on this watch and then from listening to a couple of interviews with the directors. So the directors have done other music documentaries in the past. They've done one on Blur and they've also done one on LCD Sound System as well. So they're probably familiar with James Murphy quite a bit. But it's all we see on screen is archival footage. So it's all, we don't see any images that is modern day. It's all video from the time. And I think that really did influence how much people were in the film. So for example, TV on the radio, I just think there wasn't a lot of footage that they were able mm-hmm. to get. So apparently it took 2 years to get all of this footage together. And there is some really striking footage mm-hmm. that we'll perhaps talk about later on. But they had to, like, somebody would say, oh, I think somebody filmed me on that day. And they go, who filmed me on that day? Oh, it was my roommate. Then the directors would have to try and contact the roommate somehow, find out where they were. Do you still have it? Or it might be in a box somewhere in my mum's house. And so it was like that. And apparently they were like canvassing photographs to see who was in pictures and who might have been there at the time. And it was like 2 years just to try and get all these old recordings out of people's lofts and stuff and pull it together. And I think understanding that context answers a lot of questions for me about, like, yeah, why was TV on the radio in it for like 3 minutes mm-hmm. and stuff? Because me too, yeah. I felt like that. I felt exactly the same.
I think you can appreciate documentaries more that are trying to capture the past than like one that are right in the moment, because they start filming and then there's the story right there and they have all the footage they need. But going back and trying to find everything, that's pretty... I don't know. I guess that would be frustrating. That would take forever. And like, but I mean, there's a lot of cool footage in this movie, like a lot of cool footage.
Well, I'm glad you said that too, because I thought what was really cool about it, documentaries I think are really good these days, but there's a style, I guess I would say, where there's two shot coverage of a present day, somebody retelling the story, and then they fill it in with the archival footage. So instead of having somebody retell it, and then we go, like, I'm thinking of, what was the Chicago Bulls one that I just kind of watched?
Oh,
was
The Last Dance.
Last Dance. And you see Jordan sitting there. You see Pippen in present day. And then you go back to the archival footage. This really just relied, what Dirk said, on the archival footage. And that's the story that was told. Going back to what we were talking about, documentary and movies, what makes or breaks them is the editing. And I think a big part of this, what was so strong about it, was the editing. I didn't know I just assumed everybody just sent them something they filtered through and just edited out a story. But to be like, we're going to tell a story and try to fill it in with the footage is pretty wild. I didn't know that. But yes, I thought the editing was great. And you're right, there were some great shots. They have like I know we're going to talk about it, but the just even like the establisher shots or when the music's playing and it's crazy, some of they're that old camcorder footage of like city lights and the streaking, and it's making like a abstract painting. And it almost felt like it was being filmed at the time for a movie like this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I thought. I thought, one thing, who are these guys just filming themselves all the time? Because they had so much like random footage, getting in a van. Here are the Strokes getting in a van. You know, what? Who? Why did they film that? Well, and they had some like, I don't want to get to a certain topic just yet, but they had some really striking footage. Some of it was filmed in such a way that you thought, God, they really, you could tell they were, I suppose you could tell they were at school, maybe graduates or something, because a lot of what we were seeing was really quite cinematic. I was thinking especially of like the Strokes videos and the way that they would frame the individual band members and the way that you would see them all together felt like somebody had actually thought about those shots and presented it in a certain way.
So now that like, I know all that, I didn't know it was a book actually until like right before we started recording. And Mike was like, Dirk, did you read the book? I'm looking at it now like, okay, so these are chapters. And that's maybe why like it just completely goes to something else like after a certain. So it's kind of like a book almost in a way. I guess that's pretty cool. Like it's different. It's definitely very different from other documentaries I've seen. So are the voiceovers old too then, or are they recorded for this?
I think they are contemporary. I think they did record some voiceovers to add the context to the clip. So yeah, you're right.
Okay.
So we have the primary source of data, which is the video, and then we do have some voiceovers of like all pretty much all the people involved, wasn't it really? Karen O, probably Julian. Was Julian's voice Julian and Casablancas? I'm sure he must have done. Yeah. I don't know.
I will say though, it kind of, and it's funny because I don't like Ryan Adams either, but it was kind of funny that his voiceover sounded like an old recording. It sounded like he wasn't really a part of it. I don't know if he was or not, but because I felt like this did kind of shine a negative light on Ryan Adams. Not that I'm a big fan of him to begin with, but like the way he was like painted in this movie, and then when you'd hear his voiceover, it sounded like it was either over a phone or it was just older and recorded or something like that.
Yeah, I did like Ryan Adams' music back in the day, and then when it came out, you know, I think it was like the Mandy Moore stuff, and
yeah,
like,
he when was they got like divorced, looming,
and I'm like, oh, this guy sucks. Like, I was like kind of disappointed, and then he really does come out poorly in this because he was like absconding himself from any responsibility or anything like that. Like, and he just comes off like, I don't know. He's, I didn't even know he was like such in a the creep, scene.
Creep too. He's like, they lived across the street from me, and I just kind of go like, I'm like, man, like you're a clinger, like, and then like to like make an album that's like almost the same title, and he's like, oh, it wasn't about the Strokes. Yeah, it freaking was. Like I don't know, like the last thing I remember Ryan Adams even doing was he did a whole cover of the 1989 album by Taylor Swift, and it's like, yeah, dude can't have like regular normal ideas, he has to like copy everybody. Like, that's how I've always felt about Ryan Adams, and that totally got that in this movie, and I was like, get him out of here. But I guess it's kind of like an important piece as to like why the Strokes went the way that they did too.
Yeah, so we see that Ryan Adams was essentially, I guess the Strokes blamed him for what happened to Albert, their guitarist, and his descent into becoming a pretty bad drug addict, I think, with heroin and different things. And he does come off terribly in this film, Ryan Adams, but good.
Let's not start with the negative. Let's not talk about that.
Well, I mean, why not? Like, let's get the bad stuff out and then let's talk about the fun, cool stuff, you know? So.
Well, what were the things that really you really liked in it then?
Okay, wait. I have a fun question for Dirk.
Okay.
I've only been fortunate enough to see one of these bands live from this documentary.
Wow.
Which one do you think it is?
I know the answer. I bet.
All right, you both can guess.
Which one do I think it is? TV on the Radio.
Mikey?
Interpol.
It's Interpol.
You got that's it, what Mikey. I was going to say.
Good job, Mikey.
You know what's funny about this too, that I was thinking, and they hit it, they kind of nailed it too. This was like the last era of bands with money or like record deals. This is right before I couldn't remember. I'm like, because the Strokes, I remember being big. I did not realize how they hit the stratosphere like that. And thinking like the trans, even like when you see it on Shia LaBeouf and he's wearing a Strokes t-shirt in Transformers, I was like, that's like an underground band. That's pretty big. And they weren't. They were like the biggest band in the world. And it comes out in this where they just like take off. And this was the last era, I think, of like, I don't know how people make money on music now anymore, but
I think touring and merchandise.
Touring, it, but it, really, I mean, even how you get the word out, but there's no record deals. I don't feel like everybody just does that at home.
Yeah, and I was kind of explaining this to Dan a little bit. Like, I thought it was so fascinating going back to Interpol when their second album gets completely leaked before they even release it. But it's like a double-edged sword because they're like, we didn't make money off the record, but everyone around the world was listening to us and everybody knew who we were then. And it's like, oh, crap. Like, that's what the times we're living in now with like Spotify and all these places you can go just listen to whatever. TikTok. Like, they're not making money off of that, but I mean, they're getting awareness with it. You know, it's a lot easier. Like, that was the other thing too that I thought was like so wild. Like, I remember being like alive during this time. I remember the Strokes because I was huge into Arctic Monkeys, which the same thing was happening over in England. You could argue with the Arctic Monkeys. Maybe it's like a couple years later though. And it's just wild that like you couldn't find music the way you do now, and that they were like so well known in the UK and sold out like everything, because it's like, how are people even finding this music? Yeah. Well, Dirk, maybe you can like explain it to us. I mean, I'm being serious, like, you know.
Well, I come back to a few points, I think, talking about this era in the music industry. I think it's just before the internet is huge, right? So it's maybe the last time you can get a contained scene in an area, because, you know, you had to be in New York to experience these bands, you know. You couldn't, you know, they weren't playing anywhere else at that time, and they weren't on YouTube. It was just before MySpace, which was, you know, like Facebook for bands, I guess, wasn't it? So it was just before that, and nobody was there with mobile phone cameras. Yeah. So we get people with a, a camcorder, cine film recordings of them. So it's a time, maybe what, your last moment of innocence in the music industry where you could have an organic thing happen, maybe. I watched this and I saw the, I saw all the hullabaloo that these guys had over here in the UK as well. So the Strokes' first record deal was a UK record deal. They got a deal over here first before they did in America. And we see the Strokes, we see Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs, and we see Interpol all tour the UK. And it kind of feels like this film was a bit of a love letter to New York and the UK at the same time, like how important that was. They would be, they would do all the different venues in New York, and then they would come over and tour the UK then as well. And how, and how linked those two geographical identities were. I was fascinated by that, of how important that was. But kind of missed me at the time. I was probably just starting work, and I was probably knee deep in work, and you know, I wasn't going to these concerts, and you kind of, oh, I wish I was going to these concerts. But I discovered all of them through the radio. So like Arctic Monkeys, like you were saying, Marty, heard them on the radio. Yeah, yes, heard them on the radio. That's probably how I discovered it. I don't know. But I love the idea of how New York was, you say it's a scene, but we never actually see the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs have a conversation with the Strokes, have a conversation with LCD Sound System. It's like you said, Marcy, these were chapters in the rebirth of a scene in New York. But it was so contained, wasn't it? Like Manhattan's an island, right? It's all like in, contained within an island, and Brooklyn.
Oh, I kick myself when you talk about discovering them, because I was in working in Manhattan in 2002 and during this era. And I just like, I kick myself that I wasn't trying to find, because this is a scene. This is what I would love to find, like a scene like this. But I do love how you mentioned New York, because it was, I feel like they tried to make it like a character in the movie, and they had a good part about 9/11 in there. Which is crazy. I thought going back to the editing was a good decision, because there's, when the music's playing and the craziness and the voiceovers, it's really cut really, really tight. And then when 9/11 happens, they kind of open it up and leave it like no voiceover or anything. You're just feeling it. And who was it walking down the street? What band was it? They were, they had their actual footage of them like picking up papers. Was that the guys from Interpol?
It was Interpol. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the footage I was talking about. Like Paul Banks, I think the lead singer, I think through conversations with the director, like, I'm sure somebody filmed me when we were out just looking at that. And it was, they had to, it took them ages, I think, to try and find that footage. But what ridiculous actual video to have of one of, you know, your main stars of this documentary walking around New York just after the buildings have fallen down and picking up layer off the floor. And
I think what's important about that scene, because it comes back to the music, I don't know who said it, I should have written it down, but they said something where this scene sort of was cultivated from it, because in the world, but especially in New York, there was like a sense of community, like as long as you're appreciated, if you're trying to create, if you're not, I'm trying to describe how it felt, but it was more communal and more supportive. And it's sort of like we were free. I think they said something. We were just free and like felt relaxed to be weirdos and felt like appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah. There was that other quote that I really loved too. I forget who says it too, but it said like the rent was so cheap you could afford to take chances because like everything went down in price after that. Right. And I knew that was going to be a part of this movie because the movie even starts and it's like 1999 and they show the two towers and you're like, well, you know, that's going to be a big part of this movie. I always just get so thrown off when I see anything from 9/11 because it just still like is so wild to me. And I don't know. I just like, I mean, Mikey, you were in New York. That's wild. Flight 93 was only an hour away from where I live, but it's still just one of the craziest. And I was 11 and it was just like one of the craziest days of my life. And I always am just so like, I get why it had to be a part of it, but I was just kind of like, oh, I'm not in the mood to watch this. It always just bums me out so bad.
Well, I liked how they did it though for this, because it was like, this happens. Let's not say anything about it. They didn't start cutting to like, you know, George Bush and talking about like going to Iraq and all. They didn't cut to any of that. They just, you know, they had that shot of the guy from Interpol, and then they talked about how it related to the music in the time that they were in. I thought it was well done.
They
what did you think, Dirk? I mean, because you're not from here, but like, how does that day make you feel? I'm just curious.
Well, I remember exactly where I was on that day, on that moment, and what exactly I was doing, because I was in a room with a TV on. I was in work doing some stuff where I wasn't sat down watching the TV, but there was a TV on, and we all stopped to watch it. I think it's always, I guess it's a tough watch, but I think that it's such a important event for people in New York that changed so many people's outlook on life, that it impacted the direction of the band's irreparably, you know. So I think, you know, Karen O's quote was something like, she, you know, when she performed, that was her way to escape the anxiety. And then we saw people just like Interpol just deciding to quit their jobs because nothing matters now, you know. We need, you know, this is our only focus. And how art is something that is influenced by negative events around you sometimes, isn't it? And then where do people draw their inspiration from? And they're, which is, you know, I'm not making light of what happened, but
kind of like how after the Great Depression you get the Jazz Age, and like kind of like we're expecting like kind of a big boom after this pandemic we've had, like, or hopefully we get something like, so it kind of just, I don't want to say like, I don't know how to phrase it, but it's just like something good came out of this really negative thing. Yeah. And yeah, it's always good to look at it that way.
It's just impossible to tell the story of this time in New York without it being mentioned. Yeah. Wasn't it? I think that's just it. And I think it was about 25 minutes in. And then, like Mikey said, it was there. And then I think it was always kind of in the background, sort of in the subconscious of the people in the film, but it wasn't like they kept going back to it, but it was just something that they experienced and they lived through, because New York was so important. I think it starts with like, this film starts with like Karen O talking about she wanted something in New York to happen. And we had the band, the Moldy Peaches, trying to find venues for them to play music and like just finding all of these kind of yuppie style wine bars with, or people playing pop punk songs like Blink 182 and, you know, Limp Bizkit. And they're going, well, where do we fit in? And maybe New York isn't the New York that we were told about or thought it was. So then they went out there and they found that bit of New York and they made it themselves. And I think that's a big part of this, isn't it? That they created something even without necessarily knowing what they were going to do or knowing how they were going to create it, just through sheer force of wanting something to happen, it did happen.
That's good. Let's talk about it, because the main reason we're watching this movie and why Dirk Perk picked it is for this band, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and Karen O. And I would like him to, because Marcy said it too, like at the beginning, I don't know if we were recording, but I did like how it was like a conversation about the time and the place and this movement, but you could have made this movie just about the Strokes, or you could have made it just about and I wanted more of the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and Karen O. And like, even when she says, she's half Korean, don't fit in with the Korean crowd. She's half white, don't fit in with the white crowd. And going to New York is like finding her place. She found herself on stage. And I found myself every time they drifted away from her, I was like, I almost wanted to fast forward to get back to her. So Dirk, what was it that compelled you, I guess, when you first heard, I guess you said you heard it on the radio, but when you first discovered the AAS, what was the appeal?
They're a band that had everything that I liked. Initially, it was just every little spider sense inside me was tingling. It was like female vocalist, rough guitars. It's a kind of a dirty feel to their music where it wasn't it wasn't overproduced. It felt like raw, which has swayed over time. But that's what kind of hooked me in. And then I think with anything that you become interested in, and I know Marcy often talks about her fanaticism of like Riz Ahmed and various different people, but it's beyond the initial hook, isn't it? It's always kind of like, you know, you might be enticed into an actor because of their performance, but then it's who they are behind that normally that right. gets you. And I think that's the same with like the whole idea of the AAs in a way, in that they're not pretentious, even though they could quite seemingly be pretentious. They're actually probably the opposite in that they don't really give a monkey's about
anything.
That
at all, yeah.
And Karen O is just this, I think she's just special. I think she is genuine, and I think she's powerful and fragile at the same time. And she's just a rock star. And we talk about this as a birth of rock music again, I suppose, which is a very sort of wide, broad-based term. But she is a rock star. I don't know if you've ever seen her perform at all, but she's crazy, man. And she's exactly what exactly what I want out of my rock star, I think. So I think it's initially liking the music and being like wanting to find out more, but then the people behind that music being something that you make a connection with.
The Karen O of it all, really. The one thing I kept thinking watching this was like how lucky you have to be to make it, especially in the music industry. But there has to be something very unique and special about you that you can't train yourself to do. You just have, it's like a natural gift. And I think that's what sets so many bands apart, like the great bands from like the, oh, you're okay band to like the people that don't make it ever. And it's just wild that, you know, everybody in this is, I would say, pretty famous. Like even Kimya Dawson, as soon as I saw her, I was like, oh, the Juno soundtrack. I was so excited to see her. It just was like, I had so many friends in bands. I can't believe this. I dated a guy that was a rapper.
Oh boy.
And he was not good at all, but I went to every rap show. I did, and I supported him through and through. And you know, they're not ever going to make it, but they still think they're going to make it. And it's really hard to watch sometimes. Like, and you're like, you just, I'm sorry, you don't have it. But then at the same time, look at James Murphy. Like,
God.
Love it. That is interesting. You said this. What I really liked about them was like that you get some of their personalities, and they were really humble. They were not really, even when they made it, they were like, they had the Strokes and they were their second album after they hit it big. And they were like, I don't know, we're really nervous about this. And they would, even though they were rock stars, even though Karen O is, by all accounts, what Dirk said, a rock star, they were really down to earth people, I think, still. Maybe it's the New York in them, but they were not taking it for granted, and they were definitely trying to be artists above anything.
Yeah, I think they all just wanted to be in bands, didn't they? It comes back to what you said, Marcy, about the Interpol second album leaking and then really being made up about it in the end, because actually just meant they could play bigger venues with more people in, and that's what they wanted. They wanted to perform. And I think the same with the thing that I got from it about the Strokes is, God, do I like the Strokes now? Because I mean, last night, absolute banger. You can't say anything about that. But I've always felt there was a bit of a repetition to their to their music. But then you see them almost admit that in this film when they're talking about their second album, and when they like asked what is it like, it's like exactly the same as the first one. And you could feel the sadness in them, like whether it was the fact that they were pushed to get this second album out so quickly because of such all the frenzy surrounding them, and they didn't have the time to be creative. And I think, you know, we see Julian Casablancas later on towards the end sort of admit that he needed to let go of creative control and let more people sort of be involved for the band to be happy. But I was like, these are normal guys, because people go on about how rich they are, and, you know, Swiss boarding schools and all that sort of stuff, which is the image I had in my head. But they just like were pretty normal guys, really, who just wanted to make good music. And that's what I saw.
Yeah, that was the other thing that I kept thinking also watching this is like, can we just let our musicians that we love, can we protect them at all costs and just let them make good music? If they want to go on tour, yes, let's let them go on tour. But can we stop harassing them with stupid asinine questions?
Oh, that reporter was the worst. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Or like how he's like, oh, your dad's a criminal, or like whatever he was asking him about. And it was like, Jesus, he doesn't even talk to his dad. Like,
He's a joker, like, right? So I got the impression he was deliberately
annoying.
Oh, Swiss schools.
I was ready to punch that guy. Like, I always Like, I know this is, like, maybe not the right thing to say, but I just feel so bad for celebrities. I get it. They chose that lifestyle. But, man, they don't get, like, they go out to get a coffee and they're not left alone. Like, you know, like, I can't imagine, like, you just want to make music. You want that to be your career. But there's a cost to that, too, where you're not even considered a human being anymore. Like, you know, you're considered public property, basically, because you're a famous, like, musician. And it just sucks that, like, can't we just treat these people with human decency? Like, I mean, I worked at an ice rink where the Penguins practice.
Pittsburgh Penguins and people in the UK.
the hockey team. And the, like, there was a day, oh my God, there was a day Chris Letang was trying to leave and this lady had her son and she kept stepping in front of his car and was like, you can't leave till you talk to my son. But really, she just wanted to talk to him. And I mean, we had to, like, get her away. And I was like, this is a hockey player that, like, nobody even knows, like, and he can't even get out of the freaking parking lot. Like, you know, I don't know. I wish more people were just like, hey, those are human beings. Like, treat them as such. Mm-hmm. Like, please, for the love of God. I don't know. What do you guys think?
No, I harass all the celebrities. All the time.
Well, you're Miami.
I made them. We made them.
We definitely see the poison chalice of fame in this, don't you? The Strokes are they're probably the biggest example. They're absolutely, if you listen to the first interview in this film, they do is on the radio and they sound so happy. So happy to be talking on the radio. And then they're so happy to be touring the UK for that first time. And then cut towards like three quarters of the way through and they can barely string a sentence together when they're being interviewed. And like, you know, what place should people listen to this new record? And like, I don't know, man. Yeah. You know, help me out. It's like, oh, they just got nothing in them. They just, I think they're wiped out. Yeah. And the same, I think, with like Karen O a little bit, wasn't it? Because she had, you sort of touched on it. So as the female singer, she was getting all sorts of different type of attention. So she was getting, she was like, she described it as predatory type attention. And we see pictures of photographers trying to upskirt her with cameras. And she's on the cover of NME and says something like crazy, drunk, sexy or something like that. And she's like, those three words don't go together. Why would you put them on there? And how she tries to manage that. And at the same time, whilst putting all this pressure on herself to overperform every night. And that led to near disaster when she pushed it too far. But like, that's the other side of it, isn't it? I think they all just wanted to be in bands. Fame happened and they were grateful, but then it became too much and they had to find some kind of balance somewhere. And I think we do see them all find that balance, which I suppose comes to the something what you were saying at the beginning. You like to see a conclusion to a documentary. I feel like we got the bands kind of regained some balance, though. Do you think?
I think more recently the Strokes have, but there was a long time where, I mean, they finally came out with an album in 2020, but it had been forever. And it was kind of just weird because, you know, like you said, like the internet wasn't the way that it was. So when they kind of just fell off the face of the earth, it was like, what happened?
Yeah. I didn't know about and the drugs at all. I had no idea.
Yeah. And then watching this, or just even like the fact that like, they just didn't want the harassment or they didn't want to like the pressure of it. You're like, that makes so much sense why they just like completely fell off the face of the earth for a little bit there. Like they just needed a break probably too. Like,
well, which is sad because like going back to what you said, you either have it or you don't. And there was a part where they are kind of really stressed about the second album and they look almost apathetic to recording. And then they just lay a track that it's like, is there a hit? And it's just like, they don't even look like they're playing. It's effortless and it's amazing. Like it sounds amazing and it looks so easy for them. And that's when you know that's a rock band right there. Like they are really talented when you see it there. Like why they got success. Cause I did like how the dichotomy of like, also you see people don't really make it out. I don't want to like deviate to this, but like the one problem I had about this was like this, what was his name? James Holmes or something like that. These two middle, this oversized like white guy. And it was like a lot about him.
James Murphy.
James Murphy. Okay. Trying to sign this band, The Rapture, which I don't even remember, and not being able to find a distributor. I don't remember them if they came out, but it was sort of like there was a lot of him that I just felt like misplaced only to show that there's not everything was accessory coming out of this
He's from LCD Sound System. Do you mean LCD yeah. Sound System?
Yeah, that I didn't. LCD I didn't. I didn't real. Yeah, I didn't realize so that was a name. Yeah,
they're that. They are famous,
but did they use that name in the movie? Yeah. I didn't realize it was them until like
yeah,
I didn't even,
yeah.
Because they had he was a different name. Wasn't I mean, for
they,
a while.
Like
yeah.
they,
yeah,
you know what? They took a break name. For a little bit too because whenever they came back out, they were headlining Coachella and
oh, wow.
stuff, and everyone was like, "Oh my god, they're back!" Hmm. And it was just like,
but he was the
yeah
most-
because. Yeah, he's just, he's vanilla ice cream. And it's like, how are you in this awesome group? How did this even happen?
Well, what was incredible, and it happened in a couple of different times, was he literally put a band together in 10 days.
That was wild. That was the most wild. Like, I would have been fascinated if it was just about that because, like, that, him being like, afraid of his own shadow to what he became was like, this is wild. Like, I can't
well,
believe this
I
is.
I think we know what yeah. we can thank for that, don't we? Bit of the old recreational the ecstasy.
Yeah.
Oh, that too.
Yeah. Juicy fruit.
Juicy fruit. Yeah, yeah. But it was so funny. You see James Murphy just at these dance clubs looking like the dad who'd brought his 18-year-old daughter and was just waiting for her to finish so he could take her home. It's just cracked me up. But then blagging a band together in 10 days and then the Yeah Yeah Yeahs recording 6 songs in one night and blagging a gig opening for the White Stripes as their first gig. You know, these are not people who wanted to practice for 6 months or 2 years to get the sound right. They just wanted to get out and do something. And that's what I found really impressive. Like there was, you know, they were all, you know, James Murphy, Karen O, and probably Nick Zinner, who's the guitarist for the Yeah Yeahs, seem all quite introverted in themselves, but they just wanted to perform and shoved themselves out front and center. And I admire that a lot. Just a lot of gumption. What about music tracks? And did you have any favorite musical bits in?
Oh my God. When that Rich came on, I mean, my blood was pumping again. I used to play Fever to Tell like before, it was a couple of years after it came out, but I was like in like one of those competitive softball leagues and I would just psych myself out. I'd play the first 5 tracks of Fever to Tell and just sit there like a psychopath ready to struggle on the baseball field. But when that Rich came on, I was like, oh my God, I was ready to stand up.
I think watching Karen film the Maps music video and her just crying.
Oh,
and like,
yeah.
At that point, you could just feel that wasn't even like fake crying. Like, that's really her genuinely crying because just so much was on her shoulders. And like how she said she really didn't have anybody to talk to. And it was like perfectly like edited together, like Mikey was saying. And it just kind of made me cry a little bit because I don't watch music videos. I used to way back in the day, like when TRL was a thing. I just like listening to the music. I don't need to watch a music video.
Well, I was actually disappointed in that because I think, Dirk, correct me if I'm wrong, she was crying and she was doing that take because her boyfriend was leaving. I think he was in another band. He was leaving to go on tour. She was going on tour and they were like saying goodbye and he was there when they were recording that video. And those were genuine tears. Is that right, Dirk? Do I have that
song? Oh, I don't know. I don't know about that. I think this song is about her. I think the song is about her boyfriend going on tour. I think that's what Maps is about. But yeah, so the video isn't just all the actual video for Maps isn't all just Karen O. So that's one specific very long shot that they then edited into the actual video of just her performance. It's breathtaking, isn't it? It is so like, and I think you're right, Marcy. It's real emotion. And there's like a moment at the end when she does a big sigh or a big inhale and you could just feel it all just sort of kind of come out and then come back in again. That was, I think that's probably my favorite.
Yeah, more Karen in this. I want more Karen.
Yeah, I would have loved it if it was just all about Karen. Like, that would have been
Wouldn't cool. we all? And also, are we the Yeah Yeah Yeahs? Are we the Yeah Yeah Yeahs? We've got like, Marcy's our Karen. The charismatic, strong yet vulnerable front one. Mikey, you're Nick Zinner, who's the artist type. And me, I'm Brian, who's just here because I'm friends with the lead singer. We are basically the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. Is there anything else about this film that you wanted to mention?
How did you think, because when you have such knowledge or fandom of a band, Dirk, and then they get portrayed in something more mainstream. How did you feel this movie came across? Because I was reading some reviews, and Mia Viacino, yeah, who works at Letterboxd, she was saying something about how the book was one of her favorites ever, and this was sort of disappointing to her because I think what we said, like, it's, you're just, it's the foot, it's like a bonus material for the book, which I guess is apparently amazing. And it's sort of like when you love something as much as like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and like you want, and we even said we want more of them. Was this something that was successful in what, I guess, their portrayal to you?
The answer to this is partly my answer to what are you looking for in a documentary as well, because I'd not actually read the book. You asked me had I read it before, and the reason I haven't read it is I saw quite a few number of average reviews for it, and I'm like, oh, I don't really, not sure I really want to spend my time then reading that, even though I'm really interested in, I'm probably really interested in the subject matter. You know, why wouldn't I want to read it? And but then when I was watching this movie, and I'd seen so many reviews, like there are so many reviews that are like under 5 out of 10, and I went, why are so many people not liking this film? Maybe it's not very good. But then, God, it gave me everything that I wanted. You know, it really did give me every single thing that I wanted, and that got me realizing that, well, I'm interested in the subject matter, so why wouldn't I be interested in this movie? Why wouldn't I be interested in the book? And then I went back and looked at some of those reviews in more detail because I didn't want to read them before watching the movie, just in case. And it was like, these bands are awful. Why would you do a movie about these bands? And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. For fuck's sake. Like, why have you watched this film if you have no interest in The Strokes, Yeah Yeah Yeahs, LCD Sound System? And
because
I think,
because trolls are going to troll. That's
but I think,
why.
I think I am, but I think I am really guilty of believing reviews. And sort of maybe not watching something or reading something if I think it's not going to be worth, it's not going to be really 5 stars, because my time is so limited that I have, I'm just really trying to cherry pick stuff that I know is going to be worthwhile. But what a mistake. Like, why? I'm like, Karen O is, I mean, if you've not guessed, is probably my ultimate musical icon who's still alive. And so why would I not want to watch her like embryonic form just sprout and grow? And I just loved the photographs of her in the beginning when it shows them, you know, so young and just the band forming. I loved that like concert that they did in the car park in Brooklyn where there was just a sea of people like on roofs and on walls, and just like her journey of self-discovery about, you know, who she was actually in the band. She didn't have to kill herself. And what did it mean to, for her to be this female lead singer of the band? Oh, I loved it. I really loved it. And so I was so into it. I was really into it. I think, coming back to what we said at the beginning, I think it's, you know, there's, I don't know, maybe you like more of some bands, less of others. And so the balance is always going to be to personal taste, but definitely would have liked more. Yeah, yeah, yes. But what we got was good. What about you two? Anything like that else you want to say about this before we wrap it up?
I actually didn't even know about this until you said you were picking it. So thank you.
Wow. Mm. Look at that. That is the only time that will ever happen, Mikey.
Yep.
That is the only time. Well, there we go. That was the Meet Me in the Bath room from 2022. It's not streaming anywhere. I think you have to rent it, don't you? But go ahead if you're interested in this timestamp and in these bands in any way, shape or form. I really do think it was well worth a watch. Well, there we go. Meet Me in the Bathroom from 2022. But before we can move on, it seems very apt that for this film about music we should pick musical songs ourselves. Who's going to go first? So this is for you're just going to go. Okay. So this is for our movie mixtape playlist. We include a link to the playlist in the show notes, and it's a Spotify link. Sorry if you don't follow Spotify. All the streaming services are available. But Marty's going to go.
So I thought I was going to pick a different song when this movie started. Then by the end of it, I was like, no, I have to go with this one. So I picked Harshest Critic by Alison Pontier. Mm-hmm. And it's just about being your own harshest critic, And I felt like that's how basically everybody felt in this movie. Mm-hmm. And there is a line in the chorus, and it's like, who's the harshest critic in the room? It could be the studio audience, but they're just paying for admission, and I'm the one with everything to lose. If I'm being honest, don't know if I can tell you who's the harshest critic in the room. It could be the studio audience, but they're just paying for admission, and I'm the one with everything to lose. The harshest critic in. I don't know, I just love that song so much because I'm my own worst critic too, and it's nice to like these rock gods that they're like, again, like I said, like they're just humans at the end of the day, and finding connections with people like that, it's really cool. Like, I
yeah,
don't know,
no, I like that. So I think that's definitely true of mm-hmm. these guys. Do you know what reminded me then when you were talking with your mouth? The book that this is based on, written by Lizzie Goodman, the intern on that book, one Maggie Rogers.
Oh my god!
Yeah, there we go.
Maggie, my queen. Mm-hmm. Oh, I almost picked a Maggie song, and I didn't.
Imagine.
Wow. Oh, Maggie,
Mikey, do you want to go?
Can I pivot to you? Because I'm going to choose depending on what you... Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair. Fair.
I didn't know this was an option.
Yeah. I'm torn.
Me and Mikey have a better relationship, so I can get away with that.
Oh, my God.
So I've gone for the band Bikini Kill and their song Rebel Girl, but it's got words like, that girl thinks she's the queen of the neighborhood. I got news for you. She is... I want to take you home. I want to try on your clothes. So that just feels like Karen O to me. And I definitely think there's some Karen O influences coming out of Kathleen Hanna, who's from the lead singer of Bikini Kill. So that's my choice.
Mm.
What are you going for?
All right.
Mikey, feel good.
I was torn because I wanted to pick a song from one of the bands in here. Just I felt it was like appropriate. The Strokes do a song recently about the New York Mets. It's just called Ode to the Mets. It's not really about them. Sort of, indirectly. They actually went to the game where they were got knocked out of the playoffs, and he had like the sad song in his head, and he called it Ode to the Mets. And then it was about, you know, loving somebody and, ended up being disappointed. It's a bummer of a song. This is my pick. It's a bummer of a song.
Wait, was this from like last season? Or are you talking about when they lost last season?
No, no, no. They lose every season, oh, okay. Marcy. It's every season.
Well, I'm sorry.
Anyway, the song, I'm like, go ahead.
That wasn't your pick.
That's not my pick because it's such a bummer of a song. I'm not going to do it. And I wanted to see if Dirk was going to go with the Yeah Yeah song. I was gonna pick that, but he didn't. You have to have a Yeah Yeah song in here, to me. And I'm not going off Fever to Tell, even though I should. I'm going to go off my favorite song, which is Way Out off the album Show Your Bones, and it kind of encapsulates Karen O and the band playing hard. And I'm going to go with that song for no reason. I think the song is that, you know, she says I'm way out, and it's sort of like. It's her haunting melody, and it just kind of, I think, there's some crazy cuts in this movie, and that song sort of, I think, was a good soundtrack for this. That's my thing.
I like it.
Oh, nice.
Yet again, we've actually performed in this segment of the show. Congratulations to us all. We have not just phoned it in. We've done it. We did it. But if you have got strong opinions on that, you can probably go over to our IG stories at some point after this show has dropped, maybe a weekend day, maybe a Saturday or a Sunday, and you could probably vote on which one of those songs is your favorite. But if you have ever released a second album that you were slightly disappointed with because it sounded too much like the first album. Why don't you write to us here at the moviemixtapepod@gmail.com? And you can follow us over on Instagram at @_moviemixtape, which is where you will see all of Mikey P's beautiful episode art. Oh, and it's so beautiful. We've not seen the episode art for this one yet, though. No, it's keeping that to his chest.
I can't wait to do it. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes I'm like, I was worried about this one, but I'm looking forward to doing this for Dirk.
Beautiful. But yeah, I think we do have a voicemail for this episode, right? Mikey's going to fire up the flux capacitor. And
here we go.
Here we go.
Let me tell you guys something. Van Halen, Guns N' Roses, Temple of the Dog, Rage Against the Machine, The Police. I've been fortunate enough to have seen some pretty epic reunion concerts in my time. Wow. But the reunion I'm most excited about is this one right here. It's so great to hear the mixtape again. And what a pick for this week. Mimi in the Bathroom is a great look at the New York rock scene at the turn of the century, which, in my opinion, is the last time rock and roll really had any teeth. A lot of great artists have come out in the 20 years since, but all in all, I don't think there's been a rock scene that's quite matched the rebellious spirit led by Julian Casablancas and Karen O. I may be a little biased because at the time I was fresh out of high school and living away from my family for the first time, so I was of the right age and state of mind to get swept up by it. But like the Seattle grunge scene had done the decade prior and the Ramones and the Clash had done 15 years before that, bands like the Strokes, Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and LCD Sound System, as well as contemporaries like Franz Ferdinand, the Hives, the White Stripes, proved to kids like me that you didn't need a degree in music theory to make great music. Sometimes a cheap thrift store guitar and a whole lot of passion will get the job done just fine. If you haven't checked it out, I recommend Lizzie Goodman's book that inspired the documentary. As great as I thought the movie was, it barely scratches the surface. The book goes so much deeper into the scene, and if you're a nerd for stuff like that like I am, it's really interesting. I always watch the movies along with you and pick a song to go with them. This time around, I picked a band that, one way or another, likely inadvertently inspired every band featured in this documentary. The glam and punk rock pioneers, the New York Dolls.
Ooh, yeah.
Babylon, the first track off their 1974 album, Too Much Too Soon, is a sleazy love letter to the New York rock scene of the 70s. I think it fits in pretty well here, talking about these bands that have carried that torch. You all know music's a big part of my life, and I love talking about it, especially with amazing people like you. We'll have to chat more soon, but I'll let Dirk tell you about that. Dirk, Marcy, Mikey, it's great to hear your voices again. I know a lot of other people are really glad you're back too, but they don't love you like I love you. Oh, take care, guys.
Jeez.
Very nice.
What a kicker. What a kicker. Well, that was Ron.
Ron is so professional.
Okay, yeah. I was just about to say.
Like, I wish I could keep it that serious.
Ron just outperformed every single one of us in that 2-minute voicemail.
Yeah, I know.
Thanks a lot, Ron. Ron, the host of the Real, well, one of the hosts of the Real Latinos podcast, the unofficial stroke official musical director of the Movie Mixtape, too. Mm-hmm. And as he was alluding to there, he's dropping a new podcast. He's dropping a podcast pretty soon, I think. Probably by the time we've released this, he's got a podcast coming out called The Needle Drop, where he's going to interview really interesting, smart people, you know, really beautiful, attractive people about songs that have been milestones and moments in their life to tell their life story. And yeah, I've been on that. I've recorded that with him. Are you two going to go on that with him as well, or what?
Who would have guessed that's where this was leading?
So if you pay close attention to your podcast feeds, and if you look for The Needle Drop, I'm not being coy about it. You will get to hear a conversation between me and Ron, and then I think in a few weeks, Ron and these two reprobates as well individually might be happening at some point. Is that right? Marcy's eyes are wide now.
No comment.
But Ron, thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
The first blessed voicemail back since the hiatus. And what a cracker. What a cracker.
How do you know what we were doing? We're not even back yet. He knew it. He has the inside scoop. I love it. He's the inside track.
He's a wizard.
He's in our Discord.
Well, he's our musical director, so he knows what's going on, doesn't he? He's the one playing. He's the one that plays the theme music in at the beginning. He gets his Casio synthesizer out and just bangs it out.
I'm starting to think that Dirk is actually Ron, just doing an American accent, and he just has like an alter ego.
I wish I could be that gracious and beautiful.
Dirk would never be that kind to me ever.
But there we go. Well, if you want to be as cool as Ron, why don't you? Why don't you, eh? And did you just hear the majestic way we played that voicemail as well? And it sounded so crisp. We can thank Mikey P for that. Thank you, Mikey P. But on to next week now, then. We're going to continue this theme, and Mikey P is your pick.
2 weeks ago, we did Marcy's pick, which was I'm still thinking about, and it was a semi-autobiographical movie. This week we did a documentary on Dirk's pick that I thought was a great idea. Not enough documentaries are done. So I thought, what's a good way to blend the two of these? And it also works out because I didn't watch that much since we've been off, to be honest. Like, there wasn't that very many to choose from. And I think we want to watch like the kids stuff that I watched with them. I did watch this movie. It's on Netflix. Came out in 2022. Directed by Jonah Hill, called Stutz. It's a conversation he has. It's a movie he does with his therapist that still think about. I thought was really well done. So I think that's what we're going to do. It's called Stutz.
Wow.
Stutz.
I haven't watched this yet. Wait, did we all pick something from 2022?
Yeah, weird. We're so modern.
Wow.
So modern.
Mikey, I've never even heard of this. Stutz.
I didn't either. Yeah, I stumbled upon it. But
nice.
This will be cool. Yeah.
Thank you. Brilliant. Looking forward to
I really didn't watch anything.
Not next week. Probably 2 weeks' time, you're going to hear us talking about Stutz, which you can stream on Netflix. But until then, be kind to each other. And we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Mikey, bye. I'm waiting for it. I don't want to step over the line.
Okay. Sucking at you, suckers. Movie Mixtape is a podcast hosted by Marcy, Dirk, and Mikey P. Our art is by Mikey P, and all the episodes are edited by Dirk and Marcy. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Follow us on Instagram at @the_movie_mixtape.
Barry and Succession are ending in the same night. I'm going to be devastated. I don't know what I'll do with myself.
That's the most American sentence you've ever said.